This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Anthony Stabile.
Welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile, filling in for the Baron of the Backstretch, Mike Penna. This is the show that trainers listen to, and we've had dozens of guests throughout the years here on Trainer Talk. And tonight, a first-time starter, if you will, the leading trainer up in Northern California, Golden Gate Fields, really the last full-time track left with Bay Meadows gone now, still got the Fair Circuit and the king now of Golden Gate Fields. Jonathan Wong joins us tonight for Trainer Talk. Jonathan, thanks for spending some time with us this evening.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So a lot of folks who maybe don't play the Northern California Circuit, maybe not familiar with you. Numbers the last couple of years, which we'll talk about later on, have been fantastic. The career has really taken off, and it's a career that didn't start, that started not too long ago. You've only been training about 5 or 6 years. How'd you get into the game?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been training on my own for that long, you know. I grew up in the Bay Area. My mom, she had a friend who we used to, he owned a supermarket and he owned some horses, and he invited us out to the races one day. And then pretty much you can say that was it. I was hooked after that, you know. And then I started working for Art Sherman, Lonnie Arterburn, and then I got my best opportunity when I worked for John Martin. I was his assistant for like 6 years, so he taught me a lot, and I just grew and learned as much as possible. And then I was given an opportunity to get some horses on my own, to go out on my own, and we took it, and fortunately, we've done pretty good.
Let's go back to the first time you go to the track, your mom's friend. Especially young people, very impressionable. You know, a lot of people remember their first time at the track. Did you get the bug the first time you walked in? What was the first track you visited? Was it Golden Gate?
Bay Meadows.
Okay.
And Bay Meadows was the first one I went to.
You get the bug right away the first day you walk in?
Oh, yeah. Pretty much it was from the first time I went, it was, like I said, I was hooked from the first time.
Now, did you ever follow racing before you went to the track?
No. So I never followed racing before I had gone to the racetrack.
So literally walking into those doors. How old? Do you remember how old you were?
I want to say I was about 10, I want to say.
Wow. All right, you're in your early 30s, right?
Yeah, I'm 31. Going to be 32 this month.
Okay, so as we talk in December of the most unusual year most of us have lived through, 2020, you know, early 30s. So you're 10 years old. You go to the track for the first time. What did you want to be? Did you have any idea what you want? You know, we all wanted to be. I wanted to be the catcher for the New York Mets. What did you want to be before you walked into Bay Meadows?
Well, before I walked in for Bay Meadows, I wanted to be a firefighter.
Very admirable.
Believe it or not, yeah.
And that day changed everything.
That was it. That was game over.
So, you're in school. How do you find your way to the Northern California backstretch?
My mom, we went and we started going more and more, and we ended up getting a horse, you know. And I started going in and helped hanging out at the barn with the trainer there. And then I started working with Sherman. And then I went to work for Lonnie Arterburn. And then afterwards is when I went to work for Mickey, John Martin.
You're talking about, you know, you were very fortunate to work for some of the, not only in the in the Northern California area, but obviously Art Sherman would go on to California Chrome fame. Lonnie Arterburn,
I mean, him, I worked for him with his daughters, and they're awesome. I mean, they were great horsemen. I learned a lot from them.
And John Martin, before your career really took off, talk about the king. I mean, John Martin was the king of Northern California for a very long time.
Yeah, he's the man. I mean, he's a great horseman, takes great care of his animals, he loves his horses, and he just taught me how to do things the right way, you know? He taught me how to do things the right way for the horse and everything.
Early on in your career, I know you also hooked up with a name a lot of folks in Southern California are very familiar with, Kristen Mulhall.
Yeah, I worked for her for a little bit, and she's the best. She's like a big sister to me. I mean, she's awesome. She helps me down south right now. I have a barn down there. She looks over everything for me down there. And she's a great person, great horseman, great hand with horses. I mean, she's awesome.
When you working for these big names on what's essentially your hometown circuit, at what point do you decide that maybe it's time to go on your own? Does a guy like John Martin, does Lonnie, obviously your relationship with Kristen, who have all had success out on their own, do they kind of tell you, all right, kid, it's time, or did you kind of make that decision on your own?
Well, it was when I was working for John Martin. One of the owners, Scott Herbertson, and his son, Ari, they asked me, they're like, what do we have to do for you to go out on your own? What do you have to do? And at that point, all I had to do was, because I already had my assistant place, so all I had to do was just get the work done. And they approached me with the opportunity, like I said, to get horses. And pretty much I felt like I was ready. I felt comfortable, like that I'd be all right going out on my own. And they gave me the opportunity, and we just took it.
What year was that?
16, I want to say. 2016.
2016. So just 5 years. Looking back here, some of your numbers, it was actually 2015. I'm sure 15. With the success you've had in such a short time, it's got to be a little bit of a blur, right?
I mean, you just have to take a step back and take every day. I mean, you can't take it for granted. I mean, because especially now with this whole COVID thing, I mean, it's really put into perspective how fortunate we are and how lucky we have been with the success that we've had, you know?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the COVID and everything that's, what it's been like up at Golden Gate in just a little bit. So you go out on your own, middle of the decade, and most people struggle immediately. You did not. In fact, in your first year, first full year, 2015, 40 for 116, 34% in the win percentage for over 440,000. Just absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said from the beginning, I mean, I've been very fortunate to have owners that allow us to run horses where they belong, and they constantly are replenishing. If we get one claim, they'll go and claim a new one. I mean, we're constantly getting new horses in. And like I said, they let me run the horses where they belong to give them the best shot to win. And they let me do what we have to do to take care of the horses. I mean, put the horse first. If we need to turn one out and give it some time off, fortunately, like I said, I have a great group of owners that let me do that. And they do right by the horse.
You start to get in the game in 2015, claiming horses, and obviously, and again, Keeper of the Stars is the big mare, and we'll get to her. What do you look for because you're pretty active at the claim box? What do you look for when you claim horses? Well, your bread and butter is in those claiming ranks, and now starting to gradually get into the allowance horses and the stakes horses. But like everybody else, so when you start out, what do you look for when you go to claim one?
Well, what I do is when we look for horses, I mean, I like to look for horses that have conditions, that still have conditions available. Hold on one second. Dile de Mickey. That horses that have conditions available and, like, that fit conditions that I don't have horses for, like, I'll try to claim a horse that is in a condition that I don't have a horse currently for, you know, to try to stay active in every condition and try to fill the spots of voids that we don't have.
And you're obviously very active. I mean, you're at the barn right now, right?
Yeah, I'm at the barn right now going over horses, doing some medications and stuff.
What time does the day start for you?
The day starts for me like at 5. I'll get up at 3:45, get out of the house like around 5, get to the barn around 5:15, go over horses, check horses, go over the horses, make sure they all ate, check the workers for the day, and then we'll train the horses. Then we'll go over the entries, check all of the horses we entered, go over, do the feed tubs with the vitamins and medication and all that stuff. And then go home, read forms, go over the condition book, check on entries. And then in the evening, go over, do the list, look at the forms for the entries that just came out and everything, watch replays, and all day, every day.
You talked earlier about the South String. So when you start out, you have the horses mostly in Northern California. And, again, hometown boy, really getting rolling. You almost got to $1 million in earnings. You fell a little under $5,000 short in 2016, a little under $40,000 short in 2017. Always active. You said, you know, looking at conditioned books, always just looking around. And California is not like a lot of other places. You don't really have a lot of options to run your horses. You're going north or you're going south.
Yeah, pretty much. That's true. We don't have a bunch of options right now. I mean, especially right now, all we have is Los Alamitos day and night. That's all we got. You know, but, I mean, normally we'll have Golden Gate and Santa Anita or Del Mar, you know. But we don't have a lot of options like the Middle East, you know, Midwest, stuff like that. I mean, we have two tracks, and that's pretty much all we got.
That's got to be difficult because, like you said, talking about claiming horses, you try to fill the gaps. You kind of don't want to have too much overlap for that reason.
Oh, no, exactly. And that's why when it comes to claiming horses, we have to claim horses that are eligible for races that I currently don't have horses for. We have to, like I said, we have like have a big board of races and like my horses for their categories and everything. And what we do is we try to fill the blanks on ones that we don't have horses for. We try to fill the blanks. And still they claim horses and purchase horses for those races.
Jonathan Wong, our guest tonight on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. So you start out a handful of owners, and then in the middle of 2019, you catch a break, a big break with Tommy Town Thoroughbreds. Talk a little bit about them.
In the middle of 2019, this was after the whole Jerry Hollendorfer and William Morey situation. They needed a trainer, and their farm manager, Mike Allen, he reached out to me and asked me if I'd be willing to pick up a couple horses for them. And I was like, oh, most definitely. You know, I mean, I jumped at the opportunity. I mean, they have not only have they purchased a bunch of nice fillies from the Keeneland sale, I mean, they've also bred a bunch of nice horses that they've bred on their own with their own mares. Cowbreds, and then they have some Kentucky mares, and they have an abundance of horses that are just really nice horses and fit perfectly up in the California races, Northern and Southern California.
And one of those horses that came into the barn was Keeper of the Stars, and first time you run her, and you run her in graded stakes action, the first time you run her right into the San Clemente. And you got to be saying to yourself, as a Northern California guy, you know, getting into the game as a teenager and working your way through, you mentioned some big names. There's no bigger name in Northern California, perhaps the entire state, than Jerry Hollendorfer. So, yeah, what was that feeling like?
Yeah, I mean, that filly, I mean, we ran her into the San Clemente. I mean, off the first time we ran her twice down at Del Mar, the our first two races, they were grade one. And personally, I mean, I told everybody that would listen to me after those races, I thought she should have been right there, if not one of them, with a better trip. She had brutal trips both times, and she still ran fourth, only got beat a couple lengths with some really nice fillies, you know. And that filly, she really blossomed when we taught her, we were training her how to come from off the pace, how to sit off the horses and finish. Because before, she just used to be a complete wire-to-wire, need-the-lead type of horse. And I think her game took a step up to the next level after she learned to relax and settle and finish and come from behind horses.
Yeah, she has turned into a pretty remarkable filly. You ran her the two times at Del Mar, and then two in a row, including the Autumn Mistakes. And at the time, the Autumn Mistakes, that was just the second graded stakes win of your career.
Yeah, that was our second one. I mean, it was, like I said, she gave me my second grade three, my first grade one, and my first grade two. I mean, so that filly, she holds a very special place in my heart for with that horse.
When she started coming around, and you had the Tommy Town connection now and the Tommy Town horses, did the phone start ringing more for more horses to come into the stable?
No, not at all. Not at all.
So, but just kind of.
I mean, right now we're at a good number. I mean, I like the number of horses that we have. I mean, we're able to keep a good eye on them all and be right by the horse.
How many do you normally carry?
Well, right now we have about 85.
And they're split between the two divisions?
No, we only have about 10 down at Santa Anita. The majority is up at Golden Gate Field.
Okay, so right around 100. I mean, as somebody as hands-on as you, you talked about how time-consuming it was. It can't be enough hours in the day.
Oh, no. I mean, that's why it's an all-day thing, you know. I mean, it's just, we always want to make sure we don't miss any spots and that everyone gets the attention that they need. I mean, that's why it literally takes, it's an all-day affair, you know.
When you guys affected, like everybody was, and this year, it's hard not to have a conversation about the COVID-19 outbreak. Of course, the entire industry was affected. You guys up at Golden Gate hit pretty hard. A couple of stoppages in the middle of one now as we record this interview in December of 2020. Talk about the challenges, you know, not only with the stoppages, but even with the racing that the COVID-19 outbreak presented the barn.
Yeah, I mean, right now we're like you mentioned, we're currently in the midst of another stoppage right now. We had one earlier this year. Golden Gate Fields, I mean, they've done everything they possibly could manage it. I mean, currently and before, I mean, they put in a bunch of protocols before when the whole COVID-19 started. I mean, and they've done everything they physically possibly could to keep us running and to keep us as safe as possible. I mean, earlier in the year, we had a stoppage of about like a little bit over a month. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think it was the end of the worst thing possible. I mean, the horses got a little bit of a break. I mean, they got a little to refresh and everything. So, I mean, we just used that as a time to freshen all of our horses. And currently right now, I mean, we're in another stoppage. Hopefully we'll be able to get back up soon. They've done a bunch of testing and continue to do testing weekly on everybody on the backside. So, I mean, they're trying to do everything, like I said, everything they can to keep us, to get us back up and running. We personally, my barn was hit pretty hard through that last round of testing. We had about, out of 20 employees, we had 15 come up positive. So that was rough. I mean, look, fortunately, I wasn't one of them. So myself and my remaining employees, we stepped up and fortunately, they helped me out and we got it done. I mean, for the 10 days that they were out. I mean, and luckily everybody came back and they're healthy. They were all asymptomatic. None of them were sick. None of them are having any ill effects. I mean, luckily everybody's doing good now.
There's enough to worry about when you have a barn of that side. And now, everybody's obviously faced with this, but I mean, that's an awful no wonder why you're hustling over there right now. I mean, getting all that work done for 90 horses with five or six people, that's a daunting task.
Yeah. I mean, fortunately, like I said, we got all of our crew back now. I mean, but yeah, it was pretty. We just walked the horses, got them out, gave them showers. We just backed off the training on them for a little bit just to give them, we freshened them up a little bit while everybody was out, just to make it easier on me and the Renee and people we had, so we could do a good job and make sure the horses were taken care of properly.
It also cost you a chance to be on site for the first Grade One win of your career. Talk to us about Memorial Day 2020 at Gamely with Keeper of the Stars.
Yeah, that's funny because I actually had two horses in that day. We had Sunday Perfection in the race before, who he won as well. But I watched the race at my house with my wife and my three kids. And, I mean, it's just this really strange feeling thinking, like, we won a Grade One and our first Grade One, and I wasn't even there. It's just, like, totally weird. We were going crazy. I mean, even the owners, Tommy Town, Tom and Debbie Stoll, they weren't there. I mean, they watched it at their house. They had, like, a little watch party at their house. I mean, I know at my house we were going crazy. We were jumping up and down off the couches. I mean, we had the dogs going crazy. We were screaming so loud. I mean, and I called Tom and after the race. He's like, I was so excited I went and jumped in the pool. He's like, I didn't know what to do. I just jumped in the pool. I was so excited. I mean, it's just like a strange, kind of weird feeling, you know. I mean, obviously very fortunate we were able to win. But it's kind of like missing us being able to watch the race in person and being able to celebrate together, you know, which is pretty fun when we get to do all that, you know.
When they turn for home and, you know, she's going to win a race like the Gamely with all the tradition down at Santa Anita. And the fact that you're not, I have to imagine the fact that you're not there gives you a little time to reflect on it as well. And I got to think the emotions are different. But what's going through your head? Like, do you realize just how fortunate that is to, in such a short career, a Grade One win?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's a ton of people, you know, that have been in the game for 10, 20, 30 years that haven't been fortunate enough to win a Grade One. I mean, and I was very fortunate to win one semi-early in my career. I mean, I was given a great opportunity by Tom and Debbie Stoll from Tommy Town to have such a nice filly in her. I mean, and I don't know, but Kristen Mohawk, because she was training down there in Santa Anita, and Kristen told me that filly was doing amazing. She's like, Jonathan, believe me, this horse is going to run a big race. Her and our Galloper down there, Seraphine, I mean, they did an amazing job with her. They're great to get her to settle and relax and, like I said, finish. I mean, and the ride Abel Cedillo gave her that day, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better ride. I mean, honestly, I thought she was in a great spot the whole way around the racetrack. I was like, oh, man, she's got no excuses from here. And then at the quarter, I'm like, oh, my God, I think we're going to win. You know, and then that's when it just all went to mayhem at the house. We were jumping up and down, like I said, jumping on couches, screaming. Oh, man. And like you said, it gives you time to reflect on it. I mean, I have her picture from that race right above my TV in my living room. And it's just like, I was just looking at it the other day. I was like, man, how amazing is it? That was awesome. Like every now and then I'll go back and I'll watch the replay of the race. And it's just, like I said, it's an amazing feeling.
2020 has really been a breakout year in a lot of ways. You get your first Grade One, but you're also starting to shake the claiming trainer moniker. You went on a nice little run of unveiling some first-time starter winners this year as well.
Yeah, this year we've had a lot of success with our two-year-olds this year. May it be like the Tommy Town first-time starters or some two-year-olds that we've purchased at two-year-old and training shows. I mean, we got a really nice two-year-old that Nick Hines purchased for me, Windy City Red, for an ownership group from some guys in Chicago, Ryan Ritt, Mark Spinazzi, Jeff Gassner. And that was the thrill of a lifetime, too, to be able to start a horse in the Breeders' Cup. You know, I mean, that was, I know it wasn't the result we wanted, but just to be able to get a horse into the Breeders' Cup, I mean, that was just, like I said, that's a thrill of a lifetime right there. So, I mean, 2020 definitely has had a bunch of highs and a bunch of lows, you know, I mean, but like I said, all the highs, all these lows make you really appreciate every single, all the highs even more, you know, I mean, and gives you, like you said, a lot of time to reflect on everything and how fortunate we really are.
All right. This is something I ordinarily do on the race day program with my co-hosts. But we're going to do it with you tonight here at the end of the program now. Play a game called 5.5 questions. I'm going to alter them a little bit because I don't want you getting in any trouble with jocks or race or certain races. You have a favorite horse now, or maybe one that when you first got started in the game that kind of grabbed you?
Now, my favorite horse of my own would happen to Keep From Stars for sentimental reasons. Before, Rachel Alexander. I've always loved Rachel Alexander. And Monomoy Girl. Monomoy Girl is like, I love that horse. I love that filly. She's amazing.
All right, so you're a big fan of the fillies, and with a grade one winner in your barn, kind of can't blame you. Without getting you in any trouble with any of your former bosses, favorite trainer besides yourself?
That's a tough one. Brad Cox.
All right. Brad's a friend of the network. We've had Brad on Trainer Talk, and Brad's coming off a pretty good year of his own. You have a favorite race?
My favorite race would have to be the Breeders' Cup.
Say that again?
Breeders' Cup Sprint.
Okay. Is that the race that you would most want to win?
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. I mean, I've always liked that. I mean, I think that's always the most competitive, in my opinion, one of the most competitive Breeders' Cup races there is every year. I mean, all the speed, I mean, just amazing horses.
Favorite racetrack?
Golden Gate Field.
Of course, that's a no-brainer, right? That's the easiest question probably anybody's ever asked you.
Easiest question. I wish all my questions I get asked like that.
Put your stable aside. And the races you've won. You have a favorite race you look forward to every year?
Yeah, I always look forward to at Golden Gate Fields, the San Francisco Mile, the El Camino Derby. I mean, those are always really fun, exciting races to look forward to in your hometown. You know, that's the race I'd really like to win, the El Camino or the San Francisco Mile.
We have anything pointing to that this year?
Thus far, no.
All right, well, one of these days. One of these days you will, my friend. Jonathan, thank you for some time today. We will let you get back to your 100 horses, and we thank you for some time tonight on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton.
Thank you for having me, my man. I appreciate it.
You got it. Jonathan Wong already has 650 wins in his career, and what's been a unusual year, to say the least. He's had a bit of a breakout season this year in 2020. I'm sure we'll catch up with Jonathan Wong down the road here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Thank you for tuning in to the show that trainers listen to. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile. The Baron will be back with you here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Have a great night.
The Phasic Tipton Mid-Atlantic December Mixed and Horses of Racing Age Sale is the last mixed sale of 2020. Mid-Atlantic December offers quality to buyers at all levels. This year's sale features large groups of weanlings and in-foal mares, and of course, the sale's popular Horses of Racing Age supplemental catalog. Online bidding and phone bidding will be available. The Phasic Tipton Mid-Atlantic December Mixed and Horses of Racing Age Sale, Tuesday, December 8th in Timonium, Maryland. Where will you be?
Well, Phasic's family, basically. Some of the guys that work here I've known for 30 years. I just felt really supported, and they're great communicators. They try to help in whatever you do.
Phasic Tipton has a sale for every market, every segment in the industry. There's multiple opportunities where you're going to have plenty of good buying and selling situations.
Great customer service. I'm not only a buyer with them, but I'm a seller, and I've always been well taken care of.
There's a lot of different things that sometimes you need at a sale, and Phasic Tipton is there every step of the way. They show year after year that they're ethical and they're fair and they enjoy what they do. And when you're around people that have a combination of all those things, you know, you can't lose.